This is BDO in the Boardroom, a podcast by the BDO Center for Corporate Governance for the Board of Directors and those charged with governance. We're joined by your board peers and inspiring leaders to discuss the trending and timeless issues that are impacting today's boardroom agendas. Let's get started.
Hello, I'm Amy Rojic, leader of BDO Center for Corporate Governance, and thank you for joining myself and my guest, Adam Morgan, today as we explore the evolving landscape of public company governance from what I consider a unique perspective from an analyst, investor, and board member. Just to give you a little bit of background to that, Adam Morgan is a partner at Avigo and chief investment officer at Velon Capital. Through these investment companies, he and his partners provide capital to accelerate growth for healthcare companies that are commercializing and developing therapeutics, medical products, and services for patients. His career has spanned leadership roles at medical device companies and serving as a healthcare analyst covering the biotech and pharma sectors. And he currently serves as the chair for the board of Heron Therapeutics. Adam, welcome to our program today.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate the time. I do have a quick disclaimer I'd like to read before we get going. Views and opinions expressed in this podcast are my own. This conversation is for informational purposes only and does not constitute investment advice. Should not be construed as a recommendation or an offer to buy or sell any securities. No general solicitation is intended or being made.
All right. And I should also say that these are my thoughts and my thoughts only. So with that, I just want to share, you and I recently served on a panel together talking about a variety of topics impacting public companies that have recently passed their post-IPO mark. And I'd like to extend that conversation today for our board audience and talk about the evolving governance arena that you're an active participant in. So amid all the noise and the things that can be distracting to board members, particularly in today's environment, what do you see as the most significant shifts in the governance of public companies?
Well, I think there's probably, you know, two or three elements that really stick out. You know, I'll talk about just board composition generally. You know, I think we've seen a lot of trends over the past 5 years or so. Some of that driven by quotas and state mandates that have, you know, ebbed and flowed depending on where the courts are. But generally speaking, I think that board composition, skill levels, you know, diversity of thought and otherwise is important. And so I'll talk about some of those trends. The second is really technology and the ever adapting, you know, need to stay ahead of where risks are, et cetera, really shapes governance and, you know, disclosure and all of those elements from a board standpoint to ensure that shareholders are appropriately kept up to date with what's going on. And then shareholder engagement, right? And this is an area that I'm truly fascinated with as an activist investor as well as board member. And so that constant investor outreach, dialogue, you know, who does the board work for and, you know, ultimately the exec team working for that board as well. And so what elements should the board have in that entire conversation? So, you know, as I think about board composition, you know, it's been really interesting to think about, you know, especially since the conversation that we had started pre-IPO to, you know, public company, what are the right skill sets? You know, do venture capitalist investors deserve to stay on as they continue to reduce their stake over time? Do they have the right perspective, right? Are they bringing the right elements to ensure that a company can thrive after they've embarked on, you know, larger capital markets efforts and, you know, out there dealing with public company shareholders, which is quite a divergent change from, you know, when they're a private equity type of play. You know, we think about things such as board refresh, matching skill set with the need of the organization where they're at, and that skill set evolves as there's more complexity. And really, this kind of dovetails into the shareholder engagement as well. Is does the board have the right match of skills overall to not just forge a path forward, but also to defend as well from, you know, outside criticism, that they have the right elements, they've got all of the right thought processes in place. And so I think about skill matrices, you know, do you have someone that's commercial, regulatory? Do you have the specific elements? And then also, do you have the right amount of generalists? And I think we'll talk more about the fundamentalists or the specialist versus the generalist on a board as well. It's an important topic. But, you know, I think of not just term limits, but, you know, every company is kind of different and kind of what that refresh looks like. And over time, as we've tried to accommodate all of these more specialist type of roles, does that dilute the overall board? Do you have the right amount of conversation, broadly speaking, when you're in that boardroom, if everyone is siloed and focused on something that's so minute, right? And so, you know, I have a balanced approach. I prefer the generalist in my mind with a smaller board rather than a larger board with more specialists. But we've seen a lot of shifts overall, just thinking about the broader landscape. And I'm a healthcare specific investor. And so, you know, I think there's more nuance that comes into, you know, those type of companies, thinking about the regulatory aspects, you know, tariffs now and all kinds of other variables that people didn't think about broadly a few years ago. But, you know, we are seeing shifts. I think that we've probably gone too far in some cases, you know, to become too specialized. And I see that that's likely to come back more towards a generalist approach over time. So the second on technology, I mean, cyber risk, just going through routine updates. I mean, this is an area that a lot of investors don't see a lot of behind the scenes information. And every company deals with this, how to deal with your servers, locations, you know, how to deal with any type of instances, you know, how to routinely stress test how your policies are in place. And without the skill set from, you know, generalist board, like how do you stay up to speed? And so, you know, I encourage all of the directors on the board to become educated. I think it's an area of growth, and I would expect every director to want to grow over time and learn new skills. And, you know, open forum for all the committees, I think, is important. And this one's is truly an area that stands out on technology risk because we're moving so quickly right now. The adaptation of AI, et cetera, how do we use that internally? How does it interface externally and with healthcare? How do we interface with all of the other agencies and regulatory environment to ensure that we're compliant? It's dynamic. It takes a lot of time and effort, but it's tantamount to a company's success. And then shareholder engagement, really, this has become governance cornerstone, if you will, right? Activist investors demand regular transparent dialogue with the boards, not just the management team. And I think it's important for the boards to understand that as well, either appoint a lead independent director or have someone that's more shareholder facing in addition to management. And I think that's it's good routine practice to ensure that the message of the shareholder is not being filtered through management and there's good concordance of information so you can make the right decisions and ensure that your message is being conveyed appropriately. You can course correct if necessary. And that transparency, I think, leads to a better defense than waiting to be reactive if someone wants to engage actively with you.
Now, I think all of those points are really good. I want to pull on a couple of threads that you mentioned. And maybe first, as an investor, how do you assess whether directors are truly getting appropriate education or enhancing their skill sets? What does that look like to you? Maybe wearing your analyst hat as well.
I don't know that you truly can. It's one of those that you have to look at. Everyone's judged by one singular criteria, and it's just the overall success of the company. And you assume that, you know, either through coordination through the exec team or, you know, through chair and committees, like everything coalesces into a singular report card, right? It's usually total shareholder return, you know, absent any kind of gaffes or things that stand out, compliance issues, et cetera. Any annotation in a regular updated filing that would bring criticism, of course, those are judged on their own, but overall, just you'd never know. So, you know, you have to look at corporate communication, you know, what the board is doing as a whole to assume that if they're doing a lot of best practices, that they're doing it in every area.
Yeah. And I mean, for some companies, and we talk to companies and they want to know what's valuable in a proxy statement. You know, if you're a public company, that is a great communication tool for the board to really tell its story. But I don't know how deep you're going to get into. It's like, oh, well, we, you know, offer education for our board directors every year, right? So it's the quality, it's the type of information. So maybe it becomes even more important on the shareholder engagement side that you were just talking about in your last few statements.
I think so. I think the anecdotal conversations that investors have with the board, you can surmise how adaptable and forward-thinking a board is, generally speaking, from those conversations.
Thank you. All right. Well, in thinking about the dual role of being both an investor and a board member, where do you see the most significant tension points that can be problematic if the right checks and balances aren't in place?
Well, it's a time horizon and objectives. I mean, there's obvious conflicts of interest wearing both hats. You've got a fiduciary to my LPs as well as to shareholders, right? And being a duly elected director of the company. And so we go in, when we think about activism, you know, having an appropriate time horizon, like an activist investor on board has a certain shelf life as well. And we look at what we're trying to accomplish on the forefront. So from a prospective manner, we want to leave companies in a better place than we found them, right? And that's somewhat subjective as to far as what our objectives are versus other shareholders. And so overall, though, I think that there's fairly good general alignment on what we're trying to bring the company towards. And so on a daily, you know, manner, there's not a natural conflict, but they can exist, right? If I were to own shares in a target that the company is looking at, for example, hypothetically, right, I would have to recuse myself. And so having the right policies and procedures in place behind the scenes, you know, abdicates my conflict to a large extent. If other shareholders knew that I have to step down for these reasons, right, and have a matrix in place, that's just good governance, appropriate processes and procedures to put in place. And so every board should think about these, whether or not the conflicts exist today, they may in the future. So it's just good policy to update on a regular basis, you know, in accordance with internal and external counsel.
And then maybe speak a little bit more about the appropriate time horizon, because it's not just applicable to activist investors, right? It should be to all board members. I would love to get your thoughts on that.
We're seeing stuff that's outside of just thinking about governance and the investments. We're hearing dialogue that maybe the U.S. should move to reporting every 6 months rather than quarterly. So there's an overall trend that we want to see longer term investments rather than trades, just generally speaking. And I think that whole time horizon thing comes in. Now, there are things that need to be done expediently when you get inside of a company. There's usually a reason why you run a campaign to change and course correct the company. Right? It's cost cutting or strategy. And some of those need to be done immediately, right? Either as a tourniquet type of approach or as, you know, this time value of money. And so, you know, I separate those two type of activities of where do I want the company to be in the, you know, 3-year time horizon versus what needs to happen today. And let's get down and assess all the moving parts, you know, from an external party. We understood the template to be X. Now there were insiders or affiliates, you know, we viewed as Y, right? What's missing? What do we need to do? Put a plan of action in place. And so I think those things are normal. And whether or not there's a misperception that an activist investor is only concerned about that upfront, I think misses the understanding that you've had to plan and prepare for multiple years, potentially. Right. It's idealistic to think you come in as sort of white knight and everything's fixed immediately. Right. This needs to progress over time. And so I don't know if there's a natural mismatch. I think there's just multiple phases of this interaction and the work behind the scenes that's being done.
Right. And I guess maybe just to add on to that, where do you see the most benefits from an active investor who leans in to really enhancing governance practices of the board?
I think that you get better participation from everyone that's internal. I mean, the cases where you've kept a lot of legacy board members in place, you can just enhance the conversation. It's not agitation. It's a misnomer to think that activist investors are only agitators. We're asking questions. We want accountability. We want to link, you know, performance-based pay. You know, we want what enhances value for the organization. And sometimes that's having difficult conversations. And some of these are just conversations that have been had, they've been litigated in the past, and now, you know, people forget about them. And so, you know, refreshing that conversation, I think, is a helpful activity. And so you can be viewed as a change agent, but I think that misses the mark on what's really going on. There is a template. We've seen this in other boards before. You know, think about clawback provisions, you know, routine board evaluations, ensuring that there's appropriate accountability at every level within the organization. I think it's a pretty positive event and has a very positive effect on what the company can do overall. You know, everyone starts working together. You reduce the walls and barriers to information. You have broad conversations. And that's really why I like the generalist type of board member, is that everyone can be, you know, in the same room talking about all the same things and have really robust dialogue. And I think that just, it fosters value alignment across stakeholders as well as a residual effect of all of that work that's done. Everyone benefits because you're having broad conversations. It's not siloed.
Right. And I know you've mentioned the generalist versus specialist a couple of times. So let's dig into that for our last question. And I'm going to frame it in when we're thinking critically about the present environment, the seismic shifts from technology, critical infrastructure needs, and that's a broad statement, skills gaps and resource requirements that are required now and for the foreseeable future. Can you describe what a future-focused director may need to possess?
They need to have a large toolbox. And so when I think about the directors that I work around in the boardroom, I want overlapping spheres of experience such that not one person is the source of information on how we should think about a specific topic. When we think about healthcare, it's difficult some days. There's a lot of elements, a lot of layers that are make it unlike other industries that the investors look at. Right. We've got IP issues. We've got, you know, tariffs now for manufacturing. That's very dynamic. The U.S. and how to think about source material APIs. You've got national strategic importance of some of those APIs in the supply chain. You've got things like HIPAA law, which is often misunderstood, but at the same time, you know, you need to have understanding of privacy laws, how to deal with that. Cybersecurity, you've got billing reimbursement, like the list could go on and on. And so, you know, my view of the generalist is someone that has some level of attachment with multiple variables within that large spectrum. And so we can have a robust cadence of questions, answers, and really challenges from directors as we think about the strategy to set forth for a company. And if you only know one of those, like that's a huge void for the rest of the directors. It makes them have to take on more to be well-informed. It creates more subcommittees. So there's a lack of information sharing. And so, you know, my goal, generally speaking, is to have as many people able to chime in to any given discussion at any one time. And that provides the best checks and balances for board to ensure that they fully contemplate an issue. And so some of that's strategy, some of that's technological, some of that's just, you know, expertise in healthcare. I'm also open to having a non-healthcare person on the healthcare company, just kind of give the layperson view of how we should proceed, how they think about it, to make sure that it's a good overall conversation.
Just to kind of pick up something you mentioned earlier, and I had meant to ask you then, but when you're talking about kind of a small board versus a larger board, and obviously smaller boards, just by the nature of the potential resource constraints they're under, they really do have to be generalists, right? And then they have to kind of be accessible to other folks that kind of can help fill in those skill gaps potentially that they may not all possess collectively. But, you know, when you think about a healthcare board, that's a typically larger board than some of, you know, what you might consider a small cap board size, you know, 3 to 5 individuals. So just interested on how you would kind of look at the two in that respect, just, you know, from a generalist perspective.
I think boards above 7 need to have a specific rationale for why they're growing to much larger. And I know that the agencies that look at shareholder engagement and some of the other metrics, you know, they don't want you to have a board less than 7 as well. And so, like, there's some natural tension there on what's the right amount of span for these directors to have relative to the exec team. The executive team, it's a lot of effort to manage a large board. And so what you often find is that it's very fragmented on information flow. They don't have time and effort every quarter to spend as much time with each of the directors, especially as it gets larger and larger. And so it kind of winnows down into a funnel, chair versus CEO, and it's disseminated from there. But even at the chair level, you know, to have the same level of robust conversation to each director, it's variable, right? Time, abilities, all of those factors play in. And so, you know, I'm in favor of having as small as possible with those that have as many skill sets as possible. It's a privilege to be on a board, right? And it's a big responsibility. And a lot of people think it's a great pathway to, you know, where their retirement's going to be. I'll sit on a bunch of boards now that I've done all of these things. This is not a place to rest on your laurels. It's active engagement. It's a poor hourly rate. Those of you who are interested, it's something you have to love to do, spending day in, day out trying to make an organization better and all of the nuance that comes with that. So, look, I would prefer to have boards of 5, personally, but I know that's not the reality today. But boards of 9 plus, you know, I see it as a large extent as entrenchment. You know, you just see them as classified boards as well. You know, big proponent of declassified boards. And let's put it up to the shareholders every year. Ultimately, they own the company and they should decide who's going to be representing them.
Well, well said, Adam. Thank you so much for your comments today, and hopefully we can have you back for more conversation at a future date. But thank you to our audience as well. And please tune in for more BDO in the Boardroom.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to BDO in the Boardroom. If you like the show, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. If you have any questions about what we discussed today, reach out to us via BDO.com, where you can also access the resources cited in this episode and learn more about the BDO Center for Corporate Governance. The views expressed by our guests do not necessarily reflect the views of BDO.